Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is our weekly Q&A with Layla. Now it's part two. If you missed part one, please refer to it, because we had some very interesting issues that we took up in part one, and we've got more questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send your questions. Make them brief and concise and of general interest, and then we'll read them on the air and address them as best we can in a team fashion. That's what we do together every weekday in the Hoffman Center office. All right. So, Layla, what's our next question?
Okay, our next question comes from Jake. I've read that pomegranate juice is very good for men because it raises the nitric oxide levels in the blood. Some places on the internet call it natural Viagra. I've also read that red beets is very good for men, too, in that department. Which is better at the two at raising NO levels? And about how much do you think a man who weighs 190 pounds would need to take each day? Of the two.
Great. Well, you know, he's really into precision on that. So let's talk a little bit about nitric oxide. You want to tee off the conversation about dietary nitrates?
Dietary nitrates raise the level of nitric oxide in the blood, meaning it affects the endothelium. It releases it from the endothelium, meaning the inside of our blood vessel walls, to help expand, to help dilate those blood vessels. Dietary nitrates are in a lot of things, in our produce, in beets, in celery. That's why in certain processed meats that are, quote, nitrate-free, use a lot of celery juice as their form of nitrate.
Yeah.
So there are things like
As opposed to sodium nitrite, which is considered toxic, but it's, that's the thing that keeps the meat looking red, because who wants to buy gray bacon? Doesn't look very appealing.
Exactly. Yeah. That'll hurt you, too.
Yeah.
So, NO, nitric oxide, is very, very important for good health, for maintaining blood pressure levels, for all of that. And yes, and for erectile dysfunction problems as
For
a healthy heart.
But the erectile dysfunction drug works in a slightly different way. Instead of giving you the building block for nitric oxide, it sort of slows the breakdown of nitric oxide temporarily. And I think it's going to work more dramatically for erectile dysfunction, but it's also, in a way, it's sort of depleting, ultimately, of your nitric oxide. And what we want to do through diet is supply the building blocks for nitric oxide, arginine, but in particular, dietary nitrates. And of interest is that mouth bacteria actually contribute to the formation of dietary nitrates, their biotransformation into something useful. And it's according to some studies, if you take Listerine mouthwash or one of these powerful antiseptic mouthwashes, well, you'll kill all your germs, you won't have bad breath, but you also won't have the right bacteria to convert to nitric oxide. And that can actually translate into a rise in blood pressure.
That's
your,
so
your mouthwash can make your blood pressure go
so much
up.
For mouthwash. Mouthwash is very drying, too. The alcohol in it can contribute possibly to mouth cancers.
Right.
So, you know, that's very interesting.
I could just see this. You know, we could do like a little skit on this, because, you know, it might enable you to make contact in the bar, but then you won't succeed in your nitric oxide production, and you'll be kind of like regretting your decision to use the mouthwash. So, I mean...
And that third drink won't help you either, by the way.
Exactly. It'll impair your judgment and disinhibit you, but okay. So let's not go down that path. So he's got some very specific questions. So, by the way, one of my sponsors is Super Beets, and it's a company that has come up with a way to distill the benefits of a lot of beets, you know, like quarts of beet juice, into something that is easy to mix in water in a 4-ounce glass. And I use this very frequently myself for athletic performance, because it's actually been shown that improving circulation enhances athletic performance. And it may also help with other things, circulatory problems, blood pressure, and so on. So the problem with beets is, I think beets are more effective than pomegranate. Beet juice is probably more effective than pomegranate juice. But it's hard to make. It's messy. And it frankly doesn't taste very good. And, you know, if you take it before an athletic event, it kind of turns your stomach. You know, so it's like you don't really want these beet juice sloshing around in your stomach. So I'd rather take 4 ounces of super beets. Pomegranate, of course, has other benefits. We include pomegranate extract in our PhytoGuard product because it has it's a really wonderful antioxidant and it has wonderful polyphenolic characteristics. And so I you know, sometimes I'm hard pressed to decide, you know, I sometimes use diluted juice, you know, with meals or to swallow my vitamins with. I usually don't take it straight because it's too sugary, but I'll dilute the juice, maybe, you know, 1/4 strength. And then, you know, I'll rotate. I'll have some tart cherry sometimes because tart cherry has anti-inflammatory properties and helps with muscle aches and pains. Then pomegranate has these wonderful, you know, anti-prostate cancer effects, heart healthy effects.
Yeah.
Beets, you know, usually you can't get commercial beet juice. You know, plus it doesn't taste that great.
It doesn't. Yeah,
I got to admit, you know, you got to be kind of hardcore to just juice your own beets. But if you want to do it, you know, knock yourself out. That's probably one of the best sources of nitric oxide.
But,
yeah, I do. I eat the beets. I like to put beets in my salad. So every night I make a, I mean, I'm kind of routinized now. I make a salad of romaine lettuce and some arugula and some onions and some beets. And I'll put in maybe some hearts of palm. I don't know if that's nutritious or not, but I like the taste. Is that nutritious? It's white, so it makes it, you know, makes me suspect that it's not a great nutritional value. But I like the taste.
Or some artichokes. Is white. It's still got there's an anthoxanthin.
Yeah, there's some sort of misnomer.
Phenol in there.
There's sort of misnomer about white foods. You know that they're valueless, but they actually do contain beneficial substances.
Mm-hmm.
Given a choice, I'd rather take a purple potato than a white potato. I've managed to find them lately
because
they have additional benefits. But so
beets
back to the question.
Beets are also very detoxifying.
So yeah, but
great for the liver. Yeah.
Trying to get back to his question, how much should he consume? He's 190 pounds. I'll tell you, there's no set amount. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that if you go to Super Beets, it's Neogenis is the company. Go to intelligentbeets.com. That's the website they've set up for my radio listeners. Intelligentbeets.com. And through that company, you can actually order nitric oxide sticks. And that way, you can find out how you individually process these products, and you can aim for lighting up your nitric oxide sticks to see how much it takes for you, because it's quite individual. You know, he says 190 pounds, but there's no set rule by weight or by sex. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's individual in how they metabolize these products and how efficient they are at manufacturing nitric oxide. Because, let's say, you know, when you consume this stuff, you're not consuming nitric oxide. You're consuming a precursor that you have to, your body has to transform, biotransform into nitric oxide.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you poured, you know, super beets or beet juice into a corpse, you wouldn't produce any nitric oxide, you know, because you need, like, a living metabolism, your own body to biotransform into an active substance. But some people may require more because their pathways are weak.
Mm-hmm. Jake has another question.
Okay.
He says, I heard that raw garlic helps lower blood pressure due to the fact that it has allicin. If aged garlic does not produce allicin, can it lower blood pressure like raw garlic does?
It's wrong.
I don't think aged garlic doesn't have allicin.
Well, first of all, yeah, it actually is one of the distinctions. It does not have allicin, and that's actually it's actually a selling point of the other garlics. They say, well, allicin is important, but allicin is actually is more anti-infective, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to use garlic as
an antibiotic,
yeah, natural antibiotic.
Chew on a clove a day, yeah.
Yeah, chew on a clove or take one of the more odoriferous products that are not aged garlic, you know, like I don't even know what some of the others are called, but aged garlic, it's actually biotransformed through a fermentation process, and you create some unique compounds through the fermentation, and they really do have blood pressure lowering effects, so, and arterial protective effects and somewhat blood thinning effects. And I take aged garlic every day. Certainly immune enhancing effects, no question, and cancer inhibiting effects. So it's a little different. An aged garlic product is a little different than eating a lot of garlic. By the way, I eat a lot of garlic, too.
I do, too. It's great. And, you know, people forget to grate some fresh raw garlic on their salad as well.
Okay.
Really livens up a salad, so, yep.
All right, and you and your husband are on the same page on this?
Oh, totally. We're garlic lovers.
Okay,
totally.
So you're compatible.
Yeah.
Because this is not something you do individually. This could actually break up a relationship.
We will make the 40 clove of garlic chicken.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know, sometimes, I mean, as a trick, I mean, if I'm, coming down with something, it's, you know, cold or flu, I'll just take a whole lot of garlic and make a chicken soup that's like garlic chicken soup. It's, you know, it's almost more garlic than chicken soup. And that's a great brew. That'll just kill virtually anything.
Wonderful. No, and it tastes good. We love garlic. Yeah.
Absolutely. And nobody's complained so far about that in the office. So.
That's a good thing, too.
It's working out.
They're eating garlic, too, so they know better.
We encourage all our employees to eat garlic.
Yeah.
Okay. So what else is going on? You got another question?
Okay. We've got one from Marlene. I'm 72 years old and live in California where there are several cases of measles. I never had measles or German measles as a child, and I was never vaccinated. Should I get the vaccine now? Medicare tells me I don't need the vaccine since I was born prior to 1955.
Right.
But I think my case is different since I never had measles.
It's entirely possible that this person has had measles because they may have had a very mild case of it that they can't recall. Because I actually recall having measles, but I was very young. I recall the spots and everything. Often you get it at such a young age where you have no recollection that you have it. Unless your parents are alive, they can't tell you. You can take a blood test to see if you have measles titers, if you have antibodies to measles, because that will tell you. That'll tell you that you are either immune, having been exposed before, or that you don't have the immunity. And I think, you know, one of the problems is that for the kids who've not had measles, I think having measles is pretty much going to prevent you from getting measles again, an actual case of the measles. It appears that the vaccine is less effective at preventing a recurrence than actually having had real measles. It's kind of, you get a stronger dose of the measles when you get sick with the measles than you do from the vaccine, pretty obviously. So there's some of this stuff that's happening in California is due to vaccine failure.
Huh.
So it's hard. They're using this as a cudgel to enact laws that make vaccines mandatory. But some of this may be due to the very fact that the vaccine may wear off for some people. Also, I'd really like to see a study of who that was vaccinated that gets the measles, you know, whether they have other underlying conditions or genetics or nutritional deficiencies that make them more prone to vaccine failure. I mean, I think that's another issue. It's like, what kind of condition are they in?
You think it's a problem on the part of the vaccine itself, like they made it too weak, or it's not?
Well, you know, I think they made it. They made it as good as possible. It's just that no vaccine is 100% effective. Witness the flu vaccine, which is only about 20% effective this year, if that.
Yeah.
So, this is such a problem.
So, Marlene should probably not get vaccinated then, is that right?
Well, here's the other thing. You know, it's like we hear about this terrible epidemic of measles in California, but it's only affected maybe a couple of score individuals. You know, I don't think it's even reached a three-digit level. So, I think a lot of hysteria is being churned up. I think you have a much greater likelihood of being killed in a drive-by shooting in California than you do from the measles. A heck of a lot more. So this, to me...
Marlene, don't forget to duck.
Yeah. I'm not trying to be like an anti-vaxxer, but I got to say that for Marlene, it's very unlikely that she's going to need it. And man, when Medicaid doesn't want to pay for it, or Medicare doesn't want to pay for it, that means that they... we're really pretty darn sure that there's no need for it, because they're very pro. I mean, that's part of their agenda, is to get everybody vaccinated and provide for federal funds to support, subsidize that. And if they don't even want her, you know, then it's very unlikely that she has a need for that.
Yeah. Hope that answers your question, Marlene.
Yep.
Okay. Best of luck. We've got a question here from Jeff. Hi, I've been using fish oil supplements for the past little while, and I saw Dr. Hoffman's article that promoted the use of them. I'm reading, though, that the benefits of dosing are really for the short term. I would like to know if the information Dr. Hoffman purports is from short or long-term studies.
I don't know what that... Do you understand what that means?
No, I'm not sure. Most of the... there are short and long-term studies for the benefits of fish oil.
Oh, so what he's saying is that the studies have been done so not long enough to assess whether fish oil is good.
Yeah, or that it's only good for a short period of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually think some of the studies are pretty good. They've been done over 5 years, perhaps 10 years, and some of the studies are not giving people actual fish oil, but they're questioning people as to their fish consumption over many years, like lifetime habits. And there was an interesting article that just came up this week. I haven't had a chance to read the entire article, but I saw the summary. You remember when they said fish oil was going to cause prostate cancer?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they just came up with an article that says that it's pretty likely that it's going to prevent prostate cancer.
Oh,
and they actually looked
hallelujah.
And, this is what we said. And, we discussed specific mechanisms by which it should prevent prostate cancer. So that's number one. Number two, I don't know if you saw this. I did talk about this on my radio show. I know that you have a life and you don't listen to every one of my shows. Good for you.
But I try.
your weekends are, yours, because otherwise it's a busman's holiday. It's like, hey, I'm listening to Dr. Hoffman. It's like I listen to him all week. But for those of you who are not so fortunate as to sit in the office with me Monday through Friday, listen to the show. But this weekend on the show, I talked about a very remarkable article on a study on fish oil that was amazing, because cardiologists now, they're specifically told that there's not that much evidence that fish oil is good for the heart. Believe it or not, that's the official position. However, if you have high triglycerides, the FDA has authorized a claim that you can lower triglycerides with fish oil. So then, okay, you got high triglycerides, take fish oil. But otherwise, the cardiologists, many of them do prescribe it. Good for them. But, they're not entirely sold on it. Okay.
Meanwhile, in Italy, it's standard care for anybody trying to avoid a heart attack or has heart disease.
Right.
Or
right after a stent, it is the standard of care to prevent the stent from blocking. So let me tell you what the study showed. In people who had heart attacks, they already had heart attacks. They gave half the group fish oil, and they gave half the group one corn oil capsule a day. Actually, they had to reduce it because they didn't want to give them too much corn oil, because we know corn oil is bad, but they had to give them a placebo. So you get one corn oil capsule versus, now check this out, these people took 6 fish oils a day, 6 grams a day. That's a lot. Okay, and previous studies with a gram didn't show much. But after heart attack, the problem with a heart attack is you have damage right at the time of the heart attack. But heart attack is like a slow-moving train wreck. Is the damage will accrue months and years thereafter. The heart continues to become more impaired in its function. So you may survive the heart attack, but ultimately you may have a weakened heart and get congestive heart failure, because your heart muscle is damaged, the heart stiffens, and the pumping action is impaired. So anyway, they found that after 6 months of the fish oil consumption, there was a 39% reduction in damage to the heart after the heart attack compared to the people who took the the corn oil. And by the way, on the corn oil, they actually had to decide, do they want to give people 6 capsules of corn oil or 6 capsules of fish oil? They decided they didn't want to give so much corn oil, because they thought that that could not be a placebo. That could actually be like a harmful placebo. You know what I'm saying? It's that, of course,
a lot of omega 6. Right.
It'd be like you could actually do a study just on giving a lot of corn oil to someone, and it would show damage. So they said, let's give them something, a little, you know, some kind of pill that had, you know, that doesn't have any omega-3s in it. That'd be corn oil. Anyway, that was pretty 39%. And now
that's significant.
Now, would you not say that a study like that shouldn't? Oh, by the way, here's the other thing. After a heart attack, many people are counseled, don't take any fish oil. Why? Because after a heart attack, you always put on blood thinners, aspirin, Plavix, yeah. Sometimes Coumadin. So they said, don't take any additional blood thinners. Fish oil thins the blood. So guess what? These people had to be on standard of care. They had to be on proper blood thinners. They also took fish oil. There was no additional bleeding episodes because of the fish oil. It did not cause bleeding.
Wow.
And so...
Fabulous on both fronts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
So harmless and beneficial. Yeah. And now the question is, how many cardiologists were listening and how many of them will do this with their patients?
Yeah.
And the answer is precious few.
Mm-hmm.
Precious few.
Well, I think many of them are afraid of being poo-pooed by their colleagues.
It's partly that, but it's partly this, that they're just not into it. They're, you know, supplements, you know, it's the Rodney Dangerfield thing. Supplements don't get no respect.
Yeah. Yes, and diet and exercise gets no corporate backing.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So do we have like a really short question, or because we're running a little short on time?
This is actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Gary writes, maybe you've addressed this before, but people forget and then tend to wonder about it. If you go to an airport or a secure building and you put your carefully packed vitamin pills on the belt of the x-ray machine, are they okay on the other side, or did they become transformed into an inert mass of placebo?
Well, let me just say this. If that's the case, we are all in trouble, because we all go through that thing. So if we go through that, you know, that archway, and we are all transformed into an inert mass of placebo, woe unto us, right? because no, it's that should not be the case. I mean, it's sort of, regardless of whether there are some subtle harmful effects of exposure to those things, I don't think that those things render vitamins inactive.
Mm. Yeah, and they're carefully packed. There are a lot of layers, or you know, it's that kind of a thing too. There can't be that much radiation from that, I'm supposing, as there would, say, a chest X-ray. Would you agree? Or
exactly. Yeah.
So,
and so, that's where the hazard is. I mean, you know, so I think it should be okay.
Yeah.
By the way, just as an addendum, I keep all my supplements refrigerated, and I think that they remain more potent, they last longer, even though I go through them pretty quickly. And, you know, rather than tell people, refrigerate this, don't refrigerate that, I just tell people, if you can, refrigerate everything.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know...
I do that in the warmer weather, yeah.
I have my kitchen redone, and they said, do you want a bar refrigerator? I said, well, I don't really drink that much, or do you want, like, a wine cooler? It's like, no, I'm not a big wine drinker, but...
bottles and James for you?
No, but, you know, I said, hey, but... I do it because I can now clear up some space in my regular refrigerator, because I stick all my vitamins in there, and I'll segregate my vitamins in the bar refrigerator. So if you go to my house and you look in my bar refrigerator, you'll find a couple of bottles of pomegranate juice or tart cherry juice, and a lot of vitamin bottles. A lot of vitamin bottles.
There you go. No beet juice, though.
Keeping them cool.
Yeah.
No, because it's got to be fresh. It's got to be fresh,
yeah,
or you can
yeah.
use the Super Beets formula, where they figured out a way to keep it potent. All right. So thanks very much for joining us. That's all the time we have. And if you haven't already, go back to listen to part one, because each week we provide you with a two-part Q&A with Layla. Our questions go to radioprogram@AOL.com. Please sign up for our newsletter, if you haven't already, at drhoffman.com. Thank you, Layla, for joining us.
Dr. Hoffman.
I'll see you in the office. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.